This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place to write and the perfect place to read a good book. And perhaps I should be saying bonjour, because today, do I have a guest for you. I am so thrilled to welcome to Joy on Paper, because it is a joy, absolute joy, to talk to her today about this wonderful book she has written. Jane Healy has written a book called Good Night from Paris, and I will say bonjour to Jane. Hi, Jane.
Hi, bonjour. How are you?
Okay, well, I'm going to play a little song for you, so just listen for a minute, and then I'll be right back with you.
Viens par ici, veux-tu ma blonde? Là-bas, il y a trop de monde. Aujourd'hui, je préfère les allées solitaires. Toi et moi, on sera bien mieux, je crois, dans ce tout petit sentier du bois où l'on ne voit personne. Viens plus loin, mignonne, il n'est pas besoin de faire constater par cent témoins comment tu t'abandonnes.
Okay, Jane, bonjour, bonjour.
Bonjour. Thank you so much for having me on.
Okay, well, I had to play a little Marie Chevalier for you because, wow, this book is so good. It is so fantastic. Good Night from Paris. There, you know, I always say there are golden threads that connect me to authors that come on Joy on Paper. But the gold threads coming out of this book are incredible, because I spent my second honeymoon in Paris. I've been to every place I think you mentioned in this book.
Oh, really? That's amazing. And
I love it. I love it. I love everything about it. It's just so fantastic. So I was, when I kept saying, oh my goodness, Jane, you've been writing this book for me.
That's amazing. I'd love to hear that. Yes, I like to think that Paris is almost like another character in the story, you know?
Oh, it is. It is a character. And, you know, I read every book. Anybody can send me a book. If they've got Paris in it, I will read it, and I will probably have them on the program. But this one is really special because, as I said, I am walking in your shoes as we're going through. There's just so many things. The true story of Drew Layton is how you discovered this. You have to tell us. It was so beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for all the kind words. That's the best, you know, especially since it's just released March 7th. So this is a story. It's based on the true story of Drew Layton Tartier. She was a Hollywood actress, and she was in the 1930s. She was most known for the Charlie Chan films, actually. And she decided, she met the love of her life, Jacques Tartier, and she left Hollywood behind and moved to Paris right before the war started. He went off to war, and she was kind of left there by herself, and was offered a job as being essentially the first voice of America broadcasting what was really happening on the continent of Europe to an American audience at night, because she worked all night and slept during the day, because that was when the best time was to broadcast to America. And she became so good at her job that the Germans took notice and put a bounty on her head.
Well, you have captured the story. It's just,
thank you.
I was like, I'm just, I actually, you know, I had to play some of my French music, of course. I just needed to get into that whole spirit. But so many things. Now, I am probably one of the few people who read this book who have ever had the apéritif claquésie.
Oh, yes, I haven't had that either. Yeah, but you've had one.
Oh, you haven't? Oh, my goodness.
No, that's so funny because that was suggested to me by, I had this, before I even went to my publisher, I had a French, a native French editor go through it, and she suggested that drink.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you've missed something because it's fantastic.
I guess.
I have two aperitifs I like, Calvados and Claquésie, which, of course, you have in Paris. It came out,
yes.
And one of the things that I particularly love is the French expositions over the years. And it came out in the 1900 Paris Exposition. It was one of the prize winners at that exposition, which is also the first time that an American wine won a prize in France. That's in 1900. Isn't that fantastic that a California wine from Livermore, of all places, from Livermore, California, won first prize at the Paris Exposition in 1900?
I did not know that.
And that was for the wine, and then Claquésie was one for aperitifs.
Amazing.
It is. It's so funny. If you go to Livermore, California now, you think, oh, my God, did they ever have... Yeah. But your editor was right on, spot on.
Yes. Good.
I mean, it shows you that this editor has really good taste, because some might take... Most, I would think, if somebody's going to suggest something, they would have suggested Calvados. But this one is perfect because it is unusual, it is rare, it's expensive. I haven't had it since I was in Paris last. But now I just might buy a bottle, and it's a unusual taste because it's a blend of Norwegian herbs. It's not a wine.
That's so interesting. That's what she described. But she said that I can't even remember what drink I had had in there. And she's like, no. This is what she would have.
Oh yes, this is what especially. I mean, this is what I had when I went to Paris, and I wanted to be really French, you know. So Pernod was my second vice. when we get to talk, I can talk for hours about what to drink when you're in Paris. But your editor was right, and absolute perfect. And they stopped making it. It was difficult to make. As a matter of fact, the Germans banned it.
Okay.
In World War II, they banned it. They had to stop production. But anyway, it's back in production, I think. So maybe I'll buy a bottle now. Let's get back to Drew. I love Drew. It's so wonderful that you found. Just tell us how you came across the character to spark this interest.
Yes, so that's an excellent question. I was working on my third novel, The Secret Stealers, also a World War II novel, and I came across Drew in a couple of different sources. And the way I came across her is after Pearl Harbor, a little while after Pearl Harbor, the Germans rounded up a number of American women in and around Paris and arrested them and put them on buses and arrested them and put them in a monkey house in a zoo outside Paris. That was their prison. And their family and friends would pay 5 francs to come talk to them over the fence and yell at them, you know, and the women would yell like, oh, bring me my socks, whatever. And it was such a wild story. And one of the women who was arrested in that roundup was Drew Lace. And I came across her. And then more I dug into her story, the more I was like, this woman was remarkable. She lived a remarkable life during the war, and I couldn't believe I'd never heard of her before. And I just had to write about her.
Well, you did a terrific job. You really...
Thank you.
It's a delightful story. As I said, my second honeymoon was in Paris, so I've walked all those streets, Rue de Dragon. I mean, all of them. Every place that's this book, I have walked.
Oh, I love it.
Or I have eaten, or in my drinking days, drinking. So it's so wonderful, and of course, it's a love story. She's so fascinating. What she did. Explain this entire. How she talked, you know, on the, it's funny, it's about somebody who has never done radio before, and she's worried, you know, she has to, well, can she do a radio program? Now, she's an actress, but, you know, she's thinking, oh, you know, radio is so different, and I relate to her a lot, you know. Here I am behind a microphone, and she was behind a microphone, and finding that just... getting out there and talking, and she had a lot to say.
She did. And she, you know, she saw firsthand what was happening in Europe. She knew that America's involvement was inevitable. But at the time, America, the political landscape was very isolationist. America was weary after World War One, did not want to get involved in another war. But she knew, you know, that Hitler's rise. There was no way America could not get involved. And so she pulled in people like Dorothy Thompson, who was an international American journalist, and she actually was one of the first and only journalists to ever interview Hitler in the 30s. And she, you know, Dorothy almost predicted it, every detail of what was happening in Europe and how America was going to have to get involved. So she was one of the people who came on Drew's show and talked to America about what was going on and how America was going to have to get involved at some point.
And so the premise of her show was to broadcast to America, to let America know what was going on in Paris and really try to inform them and perhaps warn them that things were changing and things were happening. And among her guests were many, many famous people, including Marie Chevalier and Josephine Baker.
And Josephine Baker, who is another extraordinary American woman living in Paris at the time. She left America because she was African-American and she wanted, you know, a different life. And to this day, she's just worshipped and adored in Paris and in France. She was an entertainer, singer, dancer. But also, during the war... she helped, because she could travel pretty freely as an entertainer, she would smuggle secrets in her sheet music for the Allies, which I think, you know, she's not recognized enough for that. But she was another guest on the show regularly. Yet, you know, Drew pulled in all sorts of people to talk about just life in Paris in general, but also what was going on from a war perspective.
And, of course, she was married to a French actor.
Yes, she was married to Jacques Tatier. It was kind of a whirlwind romance. They met in New York when she was performing on Broadway. And she left Hollywood and America behind to marry him and move to Paris.
And as you said, she was in the Charlie Chan movies, which I'm not sure if they still show them. I guess there's some... you know, controversy about the fact that Charlie Chan was played by a Swedish American.
Yes, yes. You know, you can still see clips on YouTube, and I did look some of them up just to like hear her voice and kind of get a sense of her, you know, movement, personality, all that kind of stuff.
Well, I've seen quite a few when they were on television, but and she's great. I think she's terrific and so wonderful that she did these broadcasts to America, and I think the hope was to wake America up I loved, of course, you mentioned the Maginot Line.
Yes.
Explain that to when the thing is, when people read the book, so too often. They don't know enough history to understand what the Maginot Line was.
Yes, that was, you know, the French had actually built that in World War One. It was, you know, and they thought, and it was like, it was the border between France and Germany that they thought was going to hold. At the time, it was a feat of engineering, you know, the way that they had built it and tunnels and whatnot. As we know from history now, it did not hold. I do want to mention, too, Drew, you know, in addition to being on the radio and in addition to being in, you know, a German internment camp for a while after being imprisoned in a zoo, she was in the mountains of France outside of Paris at another prison camp. But then after those experiences, she ended up working as a member of the underground network getting Allied flyers out of occupied territory. And she rescued, you know, she's responsible for rescuing over 30 of them on her own.
Her story is amazing, and I was surprised, you know, just that you came across it and then that you captured it. I love you have the letters that she writes to her family, and I like that. I love letters in a book.
Oh, yes, thank you. I do, too, because sometimes it's a nice kind of balance. It kind of makes, you know, letters can be very emotional, connecting people, and it's also a nice balance in terms of time jumps that can help. And I did, you know, one of my big sources to really get a sense of who Drew was her letters home when she could still mail letters home. They're archived at the Holocaust Museum in D.C. has a number of Drew's letters home digitized and archived, and so I was able to go through and read all of those, and that really helped me try to get a sense of Drew's voice and who she was as a person.
Well, you know, I don't know, when you went to Paris, you went to most of these locations?
I did, yes. I did not get to Barbizon, the village outside of Paris, which is about 90 minutes outside of Paris. I was hoping to go back there, but because of COVID and different things, I wasn't able to. But yes, in fact, the last time I was in Paris was this past September, and I went back to some of these places and took little videos that I hope to show on social media about different places in the book.
Wow, that's an excellent idea. I think that's great because it really... The book is so much fun, and for people, I think, I hope that it will inspire people to go to Paris and to walk those streets, and there's Paris. It's just
magical.
Different, you know.
Yeah, it's a magical place.
It
yeah,
is.
Yeah.
And it's still true when they talk about the light of Paris. The light is different. It's just something about Paris is different. You know, the light is different. And I've always had so much fun in Paris and always had a wonderful time. And the Parisians have always been so kind and so generous with their time. And they love talking about their history. And you can get into conversations even now. You know, you'll meet people who say, well, my grandmother was here, my grandfather was there, and every once in a while I'll mention Maginot Line to them, and they're like, oh, why do you have to remind us?
Because right.
For Americans who don't understand, the Maginot Line, the guns were all pointed at Germany. But once Germany crossed that line, it couldn't hit the Germans. And, I often end my program that I should have been a general, and I really could have advised them that was not a good idea. I think that it's something that there's so much to see if now that, you know, COVID's over and you can start traveling again. They have tours. Actually, I've been to part of the Maginot Line. My husband was in the military, so of course he was always interested. I could take my husband anywhere. I could get him to travel anywhere if I said, there's a battlefield.
Nice. Excellent.
That's it. All I had to do was say, there's a battlefield. Oh, it's about 300 miles away from here. Oh, let's go. Get in the car.
Right.
So that was how I saw that's, you know, Europe is a battlefield, unfortunately, and it's a battlefield today.
Yeah.
You know, so it's terrible. I didn't want an active battlefield to go to. But you do capture Paris, the love for Paris, everything. It's wow. Where did you stay? What hotels did you stay in? Did you stay in pensions? I've done both.
You know, the last time we went, we stayed in a little hotel, like a boutique hotel in the Saint-Germain-des-Prés neighborhood, which I love. It's a great, because you can walk everywhere from there. It was called the Hotel Louis, I want to say. Yeah, it was a Hotel Louis, and it was just, they were just so nice, and it was very cozy, and yeah, it was a great hotel.
And of course, well, I'm not even going to talk about the bakeries. Oh,
the boulangerie, the cheese.
oh, yes. Well, and we sometimes rented an apartment in Paris, so we'd be there for you know, a longer period of time. So you get to know the neighborhoods, and you get to know the local, you know, people. And it's so wonderful. They have a cheese store. You walk into a cheese store, and it like so it almost knocks you out sometimes, but it's so wonderful, isn't it?
Oh my gosh, it's amazing. The food there is like nowhere else on earth.
No, yeah. It is. It's just and the truth is, it was very inexpensive compared to other places. I mean, because you don't have to eat in fancy restaurants. I mean, I ate in a lot of fancy restaurants, but you had a wonderful meal out of bread and cheese, and you know it. The local food was so easy, and of course,
yes.
Oh, let's not even talk about souffles. There's nothing.
No, like. And you're right though. You can go to a like neighborhood bistro or cafe and have an amazing meal. You don't have to go to the of course, there's some amazing, you know, Michelin star restaurants, but there, you can get a great meal at these smaller little places too.
And the crepe, what they make on the corner.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, I mean, all of it's amazing.
Well, we got one of those, you know, the wooden thing that they use to do the crepe.
Yeah.
We have one. My husband became an expert in making crepes when we got back to America,
fun.
Because we couldn't go to. We used to live in England, so we'd go to Paris like every other weekend. And so when we got to America, we couldn't have a crepe. And so on one of our trips, we got the little wooden crepe maker and, you know, a big pan. And so he was an expert at making crepes.
That's amazing, because there's a real, like, art form to that, because I've tried to make them before, and it takes time, and I like to cook. I'm a pretty good cook, but yeah, crepes were a challenge.
Oh yeah, if you have that little wooden thing, it twirls around. You twirl it around, and they come out exactly like you're in Paris.
Yeah, there you go. See, I need to get one of those.
That's what you need to do. Well, the book is fantastic. As I said, I love it.
Thank you.
Great cover, beautiful cover.
Thank you.
And, you know, sometimes a book will, as I said, have all these golden threads, so many, when I think about it. And wonderful, wonderful second honeymoon. Well, I was married three times, so I had three honeymoons. But I married the same guy three times, so it worked out okay.
Oh, glad to hear it.
Yeah, we just kept getting married every time. What the heck? And the second one was in Paris, so that brings back a lot of fond memories. And I love your writing. Very nice. Very.
Thank you.
It's just, you capture the characters. I there are so many, you know, so many nice characters in it. So what else do you want to say about this wonderful book? Because I don't have I could talk to you all day about it. I did want to mention the ambassador. Tell us a little bit what you found about him.
Yeah, he was an interesting guy. Ambassador Bullitt, William Bullitt, he was the ambassador, American ambassador living in Paris at the time. France was occupied, and he was one of the last political figures who would refuse to leave the city. He also is given credit for making sure that Paris remained intact, that the Germans agreed not to destroy any of the buildings, to preserve the beauty of Paris. So he was a very interesting figure. Also, another American living in the city who saw what was coming with Hitler and Germany's rise and was frustrated that the politicians in America did not see it the same way.
Exactly.
And he was friends with Drew Layton as well. They were, it was interesting. The American expatriate community, there was, after, once the war started, there was probably a few thousand of them total. So a lot of them knew each other.
Yeah. And I wanted to mention him particularly because he did try to wake up America.
Yeah,
and unfortunately he didn't, because what happened was terrible. But he did. You're right. He did manage to save Paris because, oh gosh, what they're doing in the Ukraine breaks my heart.
The
old buildings.
Yeah.
So
yes.
Anyway, I think you've done a wonderful job with this book. It's called Good Night from Paris, and you will have everybody, you get this book, and you'll have a wonderful day reading. And June, I love the name June. Jane. What did I say? Jane. Well, I was thinking of a honeymoon. So, but Jane, Jane Healy, you have a website, I'm sure.
Yes, janehealy.com, and then on social media, Twitter and Instagram, it's @HealyJane, and you can find out everything about me and my mailing list and everything else at janehealy.com, and that's H-E-A-L-E-Y.
My favorite book is Jane Eyre, and so that's why I love the name Jane. I think it's not enough, it's not used enough nowadays, because for me, Jane Eyre is... That's my number one book.
I love that book.
I reread it every year. So, again,
okay.
Jane, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper. You're a joy, and the book is fantastic.
Thank you so much for the kind words and for having me on, and thank you for the questions.
Okay.
You were great. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. We're going to do a quick book buzz and commercials, and then I'm back with another wonderful guest who is a golden thread in my tapestry of joy on paper.
Hello, fellow sci-fi readers. This is author Bria Burton reporting for Joy on Paper with your science fiction book buzz. Today's communique to galaxies near and far includes a 2020 release in audiobook, Sunborn, by author and Nebula finalist Jeffrey A. Carver. Sunborn is book 4 in Carver's The Chaos Chronicles, and Skyboat Media produced this audiobook with stellar narration by Grammy and Hugo winner Stefan Rudnicki. Sunborn is also available in print and ebook. Now, let's download the book buzz. In this highly imaginative space opera, Sunborn picks up where the previous installment left off, with John Bandicoot and his alien companions traveling in a star spanner bubble towards a way station for what they'd hoped was much-needed R&R. But instead, they're alerted to impending interstellar destruction from hyperspatial gravity waves of unknown origin. Stars in the Orion Nebula are dying, and an AI at the way station tasks this collection of capable compatriots with averting cosmic disaster. Aboard a space and time manipulating ship called the Longview, Bandicoot and his crew encounter otherworldly beings and multidimensional travelers. Yes, your mind will be stretched. For hard science fiction fans, this book may be a bit far out, even according to the author. But dabbling in fantasy, in my view, enhances the reading experience of this exciting story. Intriguing character dynamics, nonstop action, and point of view shifts that include bringing readers inside the mind of a sentient and singing star are just some of the elements this fantastical tale has to offer. Author Jeffrey A. Carver has been publishing science fiction since the 1970s, including the novelization of the Battlestar Galactica miniseries on Sci-Fi Channel. This is Bria Burton with your futuristic fiction fix, signing off.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author? An artist? an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I am back, and boy oh boy do I have an interesting book for you now, because again, this is one that, you know, sometimes I said I have these golden threads that connect me to books, and Joshua Cohen has written a book called Past Imperfect, and I am so thrilled to welcome you to the program, Joshua.
Thank you very much for having me.
Wow, it's so funny, you know. I started reading your book. There's a lot of reasons I love the book, but one of them is that as I'm reading it, one of the first things I read is there is a character who lives in Highland Park in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived in Highland Park in Detroit. And a lot of my relatives worked at the Ford Motor Company there, at the Ford factory. And so that right away I thought, I'm going to love this book.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we hit right near home then.
Exactly. So I lived on 37 Glendale Avenue, Highland Park, when I started the third grade, when we moved from northern Michigan. And so that's where I lived. And the book, well, you know, I was trying to analyze your writing, because you capture, I'm not sure if in, it's called syntax or what, that you capture this voice. It's so wonderful. It reminds me of being in shul. So I right away, it's like I'm recognizing all the voices that I hear in synagogue. I love the way you write, and I really found Benjamin Gold, your private detective, a fascinating character.
Thank you. Thank you. This is a sequel, and in the first book, The Best Assassination in the Nation, he distinguished himself as somewhat of a smart aleck. He was less of a smart aleck in this book, although some of that still came through.
I guess a smart aleck, but just, I like his attitude. He's got a lot of things he's thinking about, and he's not reluctant to share it, and he's got opinions, and I just like his attitude.
He is not an unthinking guy, and he has an idea of where he wants to go. He's got his own demons that he's trying to slay, and he has to deal with those. At the same time, he's dealing with the evidence that he finds. And so balancing those two things is a big tension that he has to deal with throughout the book.
Explain the premise, because it's set in a specific time period, and I thought that you brought us to that time period so smoothly. It really resonates with me.
Okay. Well, Benjamin Gold is a private eye who does his sleuthing in Cleveland, Ohio during the 50s. And Gold is asked by his rabbi, of all people, to investigate a gentleman named Mendel Kahn, who's an influential congregant who's been accused of having been a Nazi collaborator at the camps in Europe during the war. Gold conducts the investigation as best he can, you know, a continent and more than a decade removed from the incident in question. But what he finds out about Kahn's present is almost as troubling as the accusations about his past. This guy is not an upstanding businessman. He's a slum landlord who cavorts with gangsters, employs his own goon squad to rough up anyone who doesn't bend to his will, and just not a stellar human being. And so the novel works through Gold's efforts to find out exactly who Mendel Kahn was during the war and who he is now.
And it's a wonderful, it's complex story, wonderful characters. And as you said, we start off, it's a great start, Yom Kippur, and he's called to solve this question of who this character is. Is he, you know, we can't give away too much. It's always difficult. It's always difficult when we're talking about something like this, where we're trying to find out the story, but we don't want to give away too much about it.
Yeah. No, he is a congregant, shows up at Yom Kippur and identifies him as someone that the guy called Yitzhak Fried, who was a notorious Nazi collaborator, Jewish Nazi collaborator during the war. He swears this guy. And the rabbi is concerned about the negative implications of that, given how prominent Mendel Kahn is in the congregation and his role in financing matters and whatever. So he wants Benny, his longtime friend and private investigator, to figure out what's what. So that's how it all starts.
And as you said, you know, this character, with Benny, I just wanted to know more about him. I wanted to follow along with him and see what he's thinking about. And he's a lawyer. But he wasn't practicing law for a while. And he found sort of a more comfort, perhaps something that was maybe distracted his mind more with the private investigation.
What happened was that, and this is part of what goes on in the first book, is that when he got out of the service in the after the Second World War, he was kind of a basket case, and he was laid up for several years. When he got back, he couldn't really return to his prior profession, which had been as a successful trial lawyer. So the way he found to support himself was as a private investigator. And he did fair to middling at that until he got a very big case. And that big case branched out and gave him an opportunity to return to the courtroom on a case. And so by the time this novel comes around, he's both doing private investigation work and doing lawyering. And as he says in the book, he's always, you know, pining for the profession he's not practicing at the current time. If he's doing private investigation, he wants to be a lawyer. If he's doing lawyering, he wants to be a private investigator. He says he is the champion of the glass half full, half empty, which is about to spring a leak. So that's who he is.
Yeah, and it's funny, and I was amused. In the first page, Benny is watching Perry Mason. And nowadays, of course, the old Perry Mason shows are running all the time. And because I sort of work weird hours, I'm often up in the middle of the night. And I will watch the old Perry Mason, the black and white, you know, the original Perry Mason. And it was funny when I started reading. And, yeah, that was one of the things that sort of put me into that. 1950s, 60s feel, vibes.
Yeah, I mean, it turned out that Yom Kippur, in the year that the movie was, the book was set, was on a Saturday. And so what did people do on a Saturday night during that era? They watched Perry Mason. And that's what he was doing.
Exactly. And so that's why I right away thought of my dad. And I thought of the same thing, that's what people would be doing. So there's something, you capture that feeling. I really enjoy that. As I said, I'm not sure if that's the way you talk or if it's your writing, but you capture that the tone that is just perfect for the book.
Well, I appreciate that. But when with the first book, my kids all came to me and they said they know I had written it because the character was a smart aleck. And that was just like me. So I told them, I thanked them for how much respect they were showing me. But that is somewhat accurate. Benny Gold does talk like me and does see things often in the same sort of light. So that makes it easier to write, actually. So
well, so that makes you a very interesting person.
I don't know if anyone's going to be writing books about what I do, but we'll see.
We'll see. So, but you've been writing for a while. You've obviously, you know, I always talk about finding the joy on paper. You love writing.
Yeah. What happened was, with me, I always, I'm a lawyer, and as they say, every lawyer is a frustrated novelist. And that was me going back to college. But when my kids all left for college at the beginning of the century, I had time, and I, at the time, was really immersed in crime fiction from the 40s and 50s, and I am a big devotee to film noir and have a huge collection. And so I was thinking that of all the private eyes that I had seen in these media, that none of them were from Cleveland. And so I thought, well, there's a niche that I could fill. And the other thing is, because I'm neurotic, I also thought, you know, none of these private eyes have been Jewish. So I said, okay, I'm going to create a character that fills both of these voids. And I started out just doing sketches, and it was really kind of a lark just to see what would happen. But as I worked on it more, it became a more serious project, and it turned into the first book. So that's how it started.
Well, I think it's a good idea. I think it's a great series because, yes, we didn't have, you know, we had the Rabbi Kellerman books, but, you know, it's been a while since we had something. It has that authenticity, I think, of being having this Jewish background, which is nice, and but it's also, you know, it's just right across the board, everybody can enjoy this book because it's just a good, it's a good detective story.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I wasn't writing this exclusively for a Jewish audience, and to tell you the truth, if the book were viewed that way, I'd be very disappointed.
Yeah, because it shouldn't be. As I said, I can appreciate, but it is, when you come down to it, it is a detective story. And a good detective story, whether it's, you know, Columbo or anybody else, any nationality, when a detective story is good, it's good. And you've woven an intriguing story here because it's not one-dimensional. And the reader doesn't know what exactly, you know, people misidentify people sometimes. People think people are other people, and then other people take other people's ID. So you don't know. And so the mystery goes on, and it's really well developed.
Thank you. And that took some detailed plotting, figure out who was what and how they would ultimately come together. And sometimes it felt like it was spinning out of control, but I think I was able to rein it in at the end and make it all make sense.
Well, I think you did it. And as I said, it's excellent. I think it's just a great read, a wonderful mystery. You're working on your third one in the series?
I am.
The minute I was reading, I said, yes, this is going to be a nice long series because I think it's clever. It's smart, very well written. But that's, you know, lawyers, you lawyers are have this ability, and you have to understand language and how to use it. And you've done a wonderful job here.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I really appreciate you saying that.
So, you know, it's going to be fun to watch this continue. I love a good series that just, when you have a good character and you can run with it, and Benny is a character that, as I said, right from the beginning, I wanted to know more about him. I wanted to you care about him, and he can be a smart aleck, but you still like him, and you want to see how he's going to figure things out. So I think Benny Gold is a wonderful character to add to the whole detective category, and I think you know, this is going to be a nice successful series for you.
Well, I hope you're right, and I'll try to fulfill your expectations because that's the goal. And you know, I really like writing about him, and I like writing about Cleveland in the 50s, and so it's a good mesh.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. Well, I think the 50s period is fascinating, and I love all. As I said, you managed to bring just all of the things that make that period come alive. I really enjoyed that. You painted a picture for me. And I myself had never been to Cleveland, but I found it fascinating. Of course, as I said, I was surprised when I found the Detroit. I don't know, you were in Detroit in Highland Park, or you have family there?
No, I visited there. And I just, that came from research. I wanted the guy, that character, to be from out of town in a place that was close enough for him to visit for the holiday. And so I just figured out
Detroit,
where he would be, where he would work, and where, you know, a location from that. So that's how that came about.
Well, that's perfect. That was perfect. That was perfect for me. Again, I think it's a great book, and it's by Joshua Cohen. It's called Past Imperfect. And you have a website you want people to go to?
Yeah, it's the website is Joshua Cohen Author. One word, Joshua Cohen Author .com.
And
yeah.
Yeah, and they can find out more. Your other book, your first book, and I think you have a couple of other books.
Yeah, the other book is there, and a little biography, and a good shot of downtown Cleveland from the 50s, so it might be worth a quick visit.
Okay, well, thank you again. Joshua, I think it's a great book. It's been fun talking to you, and as soon as you have the third book, I want you back here, okay?
Thank you very much for having me.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye.
All right. Oh, wow. What a nice guy, and what a nice book. I love mysteries where you have a lot of, well, you know, you have all these little threads that take you to this place, and you're not sure what's going to happen. I love that. That's what makes a great mystery. So I was really happy with this. And again, the book in Paris, oh, Good Night Paris, yes, that's a very special book, too. So this is, you know, I want to thank everybody. It was the 8th anniversary of Joy on Paper last Thursday, and I want to thank everyone who sent me such nice emails. Thank you very much. It was really, really very touching, and particularly all the people who, and all the authors who, you know, sent me updates on what they're doing, and maybe I'm starting to book some more of the authors who have been on the program, and I will be also inviting a few of the authors who really were at the very beginning, like Doug Brunt, who was of course here for the 8th anniversary. And Doug Brunt I am so thrilled that he has a new book coming out in the fall, and it is going to be a wonderful, wonderful book. It's called Rudolf Diesel, and you can pre-order it now, and it's going to be a real thrilling book. I'm waiting for my copy to arrive because he's sending me a early. This is the fun thing about Joy on Paper. The minute within a few weeks of doing Joy on Paper, and Doug Brunt was my fourth guest, and he was the first one to send me a book, an autographed book, and he overnighted it to me, and I have that right there by my desk, and I look at it every day and am reminded of how wonderful he was, just to be such a great guest and to make me feel, you know, that I could do this. And so I sort of a little bit like Drew Layton, who was broadcasting from Paris, and here I am broadcasting from Clearwater, Florida, which is a wonderful, glorious place, although it's a little cool today. I actually have a jacket on because it's cool. And I want to again say something special to my son. He is on a trip, and I want to say hello to him because I know that he listens in. And thank you so much for everything. Again, all the 8th anniversary surprises that I received, it was really kind of everybody to send me things and send me emails and flowers and things. So thank you all so much. I really appreciate it. What's coming up? Oh, I have some wonderful things coming up. And next, not this week, but next, when is it? Next Thursday, I have a very special guest, Ed Hedgem, and I'm looking forward to talking to him because this man has been so wonderful, and I have been so thrilled with talking to him about his books over the year, and he's going to be on. And just everybody, I'm a little bit overwhelmed today because I got so many emails when I got up this morning and I clicked on, and I'm always getting a lot of emails, but I got so many of these wonderful, kind emails from people, and they touch my heart, and I'm so happy that many of you are, you know, using the things that I've sent you, the graphics that I've done for you on Facebook to help promote your books, because that's what I want to do. Because I just want everybody to remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, a streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel, like I am hoping for Carol J. Perry. You never know, and you won't know unless you start writing. So people, start writing, and you can be on Joy on Paper in this marvelous 8th year of Joy on Paper. And 9th year, my goodness, it's going to be a wonderful year. So start writing, especially you NaNoWriMo people. When are you going to finish your books and get on Joy on Paper? Meanwhile, say something nice to somebody, and I will say something nice to be in the control room, because he got everything, and he got my music today, and Bria Burton's Book Buzz. Thank you, Ed. And he saluted me. I saluted him. I should have been a general. And if I had been a general, the Maginot Line would not have fallen. I would not have let it fall. So everybody, have a wonderful, wonderful day. Bye-bye now.